welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and we have another great show to do tonight, dealing with the question of revolution and spiritual world change. Now, where did I get that topic from? Well, all you have to do is turn the news on. It's almost hard not to hear what's going on. However, some of this fits in with things that we've talked about for 6-plus years on this show. And for that reason, I thought it would be appropriate to bring in some of the current issues and explain them in more spiritual terms, because a lot of people are saying, well, why is this happening? Why is that happening? And all this stuff. And I bet you it's something that guy on the radio said about something to deal with the third ray going out and the fourth ray coming in. It's all kind of crazy stuff, you know. That's probably about the extent of what most people remember from some of my shows, anyway. Especially if they listen to some of the earlier ones and haven't listened to anything that recent, that could be a true statement. So let's first of all, define what I'm referring to. Revolution, I'm talking about just what's going on, which is that revolution is the idea that instead of things moving in a kind of normal progression of development that you would expect or think of, revolution is a sudden and sometimes violent upheaval or change from what exists. And it's usually caused by a significant level of force against what is. Doesn't have to be violent. It could be, but it doesn't have to be. But there is force involved in revolution. That's the normal connotation, we'll say. I don't know if it's a denotation. I don't know if the dictionary would agree with me on it. But I'm giving what I think would be most people's understanding of revolution. And revolution can be in a number of different ways. It could be something in science, or something in a revolution in technology, strangely, that pushes out the old and suddenly and brings in something new. But in this case, we're talking about more of political revolution, obviously, and beyond that, revolution of thought, which is kind of a new kind of thing, where people are no longer thinking that they have no ability to make change. They believe they can make change, or they believe they have to make change, and they're willing to try against things that seem intransient to them or unfair. So we have some of this going on in a lot of different ways. Now, what about spiritual world change? Well, that's different than the question of revolution in itself. We could have a spiritual world change without the force that is employed in revolution. So if we wanted to have a spiritual change without force, it couldn't be revolutionary, but it might be, we'll say, in some way, a constructive and gradual, or maybe even fast, but not non-forceful means, usually caused by education and sometimes faith and light of God in people's minds. And then it's possible to have a non-revolution spiritual world change. That is a more difficult and complicated way of making a change. It requires oftentimes some degree of education and enlightenment of the people who are refusing the change, and sometimes from tyrannical people who are trying to, through power, control others. So this is not an easy thing to do. But it could be done, and it has been done on occasion, not nearly as often as revolutions have. Revolutions are easier from the standpoint of attempting to make a change. But they're not that easy either, because there's usually a great deal of fear in people when they are facing forces multiplied by significant factors beyond what exists presently in their lives. Those forces threaten them in various ways, either economically or possibly physically or possibly in some other means, of which there are really many, many kinds of force that can be applied, that they would find difficult to deal with. So it isn't easy to mount a revolution because people have fears about doing so. And as far as the factor that I mentioned at the beginning of the show about the ray change, we are moving in a time where the third ray, which is highly militant, when it is exerted with forces. Forces is one kind of energy against another. And when those forces are against each other, the third ray is the most militant, the most difficult type of energy to, in some way, we'll say, achieve a positive and, we'll say, godly outcome. So the militancy can oftentimes lead to atrocities, killings, on all sides. It doesn't have to be just be on the tyrannical side of one part of the situation, but it's more likely going to be dark by people who are already dark. And so this is one of the concerns that I have, and that maybe we should all have, that we are in a time where the world is a powder keg, because until another year plus has gone by, till probably actually another 2 years have gone by from now, things are going to keep probably getting considerably worse, and that doesn't just bode well for the world. Now, why are things going to get worse rather than better? Most likely. The reason is that the third ray deals with communication. It's part of our throat chakra. It also deals with the building of civilization, which is entirely under the third ray by definition. And it deals with military and police and power, energy, all the things we're interested in today, right? Energy is literally a manifestation of the third ray. The third part of God's mind as well, which has to do with all the things we consider significant about the physical universe. And it's a big deal because the planet itself was founded to try to develop a life that can overcome some of the difficulties of life in the physical world, particularly because it's a physical kind of planet, and those are kind of rare under the third ray. So the focus of our planet is to try to get this ray to become anything other than dark and evil after it's been around for a long time, and especially when it's going in and out. Especially when it's going out and it's been in for a long time. It's been in for about 675 years, give or take, right now, and that's a long time. Now, that's quite a long time for a major ray to be in focus. The second ray has actually been in focus a bit more, but it is almost the opposite in terms of some of the more negative qualities of the third ray. And so this is a more dangerous kind of situation. And so we're in a situation now. We're in a we'll say the cusp of a coming series of crises. Now these kinds of crises are well known and have been well known about for thousands of years. So it isn't like, gee, we woke up one day and suddenly this is what's happening to us. In spiritual terms, if you go back to various spiritual writings, you find that there's a lot of, for various reasons, there's a lot of understanding that at this particular time in the world's development, we're going to have a problem. Now, this all goes together with the development of humans as they are today, and it's all about humans. I don't want you to think this is a problem because of the whales or because there's some upset between the sun and the earth or all kinds of other things. The real problem is with human beings. Human beings needed an extra 10 million years or so, 5 to 10 million, to develop. But there wasn't sufficient time in the plan for this planet with what we're trying to do in a metaphysical and spiritual sense to allow that to happen. So in numerous ways, we've been kind of cut short in our opportunity to spiritually develop ourselves. And the cost of this is the atrocities in various civilizations, particularly the worst being during the Roman epoch, when the Romans, who were third-rate people, not to be confused with Italians today, who are more fourth-rate, but the Romans who were third-rate people, they reached some very high levels of atrocities, which then worked its way out when the third rate went out of focus about 525 A.D., into a complete breakdown in civilization, the beginning of the Dark Ages. And as bad as the Romans were, and atrocious as they were, they still had some kind of law and some kind of fairness, some kind of light occasionally within their civilization. But that all kind of went away, and the world for about 300 years became a nightmare. And that's just a terrible thing until the time of Charlemagne in the 800s. For about 300 years, it was just a nightmare, and there was a lot of problems. And a lot of things festered and became horrible. And it took another couple hundred years before it really started to clear up. But when it did, then we had the clash between Christianity as a religion, you know, and of course Islam, and though that turned the Western part of the world into a crazy situation. At the same time, China was actually developing a more rational and reasonable civilization. Most of us aren't familiar with that, but that's true. Because they were able to change the way that they responded to the change in the race, because they are a third-ray country, and they were even then. And so they were able to adjust better than the Western countries seem to do. There's something to be learned about that. And you could say, well, how in the heck did China do that? Well, they did so by being creative enough to move in the direction of adopting a more, we'll say, multi-ray focus for their society from just the more third-ray issues that they tended to focus on earlier. And they became a more, we'll say, developed and harmonious civilization, if not completely democratically and republically developed kind of society. They still had a lot of other issues, and they still had an empire and an emperor. But nonetheless, they managed to avoid some of the real terrible things that took place in Western society. However, if you go back 1,000 years, China kind of went through a feudal period that was really terrible, and that had many of the atrocities in it of the Dark Ages. So it's just that they may have matured a considerable amount further before these changes took place on the planet. I'm giving you these examples because I'm preparing you for what I'm going to talk about in the future, which we'll deal with after the break. And so it behooves me now, I guess, to make sure that you can kind of see that there's some differences and that we have a lot of options. We could go a lot of different ways if at least the Western part of the world takes the lead, I think. But right now, the United States is not a good leading country, so I don't know who is going to do that. Now, here is some ideas to think about in terms of spiritual world change. If you want to end up with a spiritual world, you have to have a world that recognizes that God exists and that God is good, and God is neither violent nor destructive or any of the things that are quite hostile, negative elements of what we would consider a bad person. So you have to have a God that has sense to that meaning of what the word should be. And I'm not talking about any specific God. I'm not talking about Jesus Christ. I'm not talking about Allah. I'm not talking about Yahweh. I'm not talking about any specific God. I'm talking about God as a general idea. So the first thing is that we need most people, more than half of the people in the world, believing that there is a creator, a God, and that creator is here to create goodness, but is not the only primary creator. God has decided to allow life to participate in the creation, and human life to be a major player or actor in the process. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a good thing, because God then gives us the freedom to be creators and to eventually be a part of and grow from that part of participating with God in our creations, co-creation. It's terrific. And it's a magnanimous and a wonderfully brilliant God that comes up with that kind of idea. But at the same time, if God is this magnanimous and wonderful being, it isn't a God that is bigoted, hates others of different religions, and or wants to kill them, or wants to imprison them, or whatever, or wants everyone to think and pray and whatever the way a certain religion might be or not be, or whatever. The whole point is this is the antithesis of God. So where we need to straighten ourselves out is in the area of faith, because if we don't straighten that part out, I don't know that we get to a spiritual world change. We would get a world change, I think, and a revolution about getting there. But I think it'll be an anti-spiritual world. And that's not a good thing, to say the least. Again, we're going to talk a lot more about that at the break, but I want to set down the parameters of what I'm trying to explain here. So faith becomes a huge issue of how a person sees and understands God is way more important today than it was 20 or 30 years ago. Why is that? Because the third ray has radicalized all elements of the way we think and behave. Now, you could say, well, this jihad thing that the Islamists are doing, the radical Islamists are doing, has that been around since the 11th century or 12th century? Well, it's actually been around longer than that if you want to go back into the writings. But the problem with it is it's also interpretive. And beyond the interpretation issue, there are contradictions to it. Even if you interpret something in what may only be the way you can figure it to be, if there's contradictions, if one part says go out and kill all the people who leave your religion because they don't deserve to live and they're going to go to hell when you kill them, then there's another part that says, but you should never do anything like that. You should never force a person to be something other than what they experience as their own God. So you got some real issues here. And those contradictions need to be resolved by the religion itself and or by the people who practice it. Here's my concern. If the moderate people don't start making their thought changes, now, I'm not talking about any physical things, their thought changes about what they clearly understand to be God, which may require some changes in some of their writings from quote-unquote important persons in their religion, then if they don't really do some inward journey kind of stuff, we can end up with some of the worst issues ever in all of history to be solved among humanity. And the reason for this is that instead of seeing God as being good and wonderful and a terrific being, we're seeing God as evil. And that's the end. Once your God becomes evil, there's usually no climbing out of it. And evil destroys everything it can of life. And it destroys all the things that life does in connection with God. And then eventually evil destroys itself. So the thing that's so strange about our whole circumstance right now is that people are claiming we have a problem with economics, we got to educate these people, we've got to give them better leaders or help them find better leaders, and they got to have democracy, which is absurd because democracy just means that they're going to express whatever thoughts and feelings they have in a political process. But if their thoughts and feelings are to do murder and harm and mayhem to others who aren't like themselves, I don't consider that a step in the right direction, you know. It's sort of like giving a crazed person a machine gun and telling them that, of course, now that they're free and democratic and they can vote, it's okay to go ahead and let the will of Allah be theirs to go kill people. It would be a nutty thing to consider. Now, it is interesting that every religion that I'm familiar with has in it many great concepts about God. It's just that some religions, and potentially most of them, if not all, have within them major contradictions that confuse people to all get-go and cause them to make terrible mistakes in terms of living their life and how they treat other people. And I'm not just talking about, you know, Islam. I'm talking about all religions that I'm familiar with to have some element of this. A lot of them have a lot of it. Because religions are made by people, not by God. They may be inspired by what people think God is, but they're still made by people. And the rules they make, the suggestions, or even the edicts that they make, are oftentimes based upon very dark feelings and hostility and the things that are not godly. Okay, so what I'm suggesting is that to change the world, yeah, we can send money and aid and try to help people to get free from dictators, which, by the way, none of those things am I against. Yet the thing that we need to do the most is to get people to be able to see light, to see God. And in order to see light and God, there are certain conditions that I'm going to now go into. The first is a person must live without fear of imminent death or brutality and destruction. That's number one. They can't see light until they have that condition present, unless they're unusually developed and already spiritually freely developed people. So I'm talking about all the people in Egypt and Libya, you name it, Bahrain. These folks are all wanting to get out from under a dictatorial regime, in some cases highly tyrannical regime, with a lot of evil in it. But they need to also be looking at light and to be out of imminent force and danger. What oftentimes happens in revolutions, because they involve force, they always involve force. The force could be just 1,000 or 10 million people in the street. It doesn't matter, it's still a force. Because it involves a force, it's easy to change a revolution of wanting to be looking for light and emulating light and creating the light into one that is creating darkness and that tries to force everybody else to be just like them or whatever. The reason it's easy to do that is because the means of the revolution to begin with is the force, even if it's nonviolent. Now, we talk about Gandhi and Martin Luther King. They were greatly known for their nonviolent protests, but they are still forceful. They had to be, because the type of darkness they were up against was very forceful back towards them. One could argue the same is true in the present revolutions that are taking place in the over half dozen countries right now and increasing in the Middle East. And so here is where we need to have a better understanding of this question of revolution. If you're going to use the method of nonviolent protesting and revolution, then you also have to make sure that people can see the light. And that requires more than just teachers. It requires spiritual teachers. And the spiritual teachers have to be teachers of God, not of darkness. A guy getting up saying, well, Hitler didn't do a good enough job with the Jews, so we'll finish it off for him, for God, is a nutcase. And he's another tyrant in the making. And it's a guy who right now who may become the leader, next leader of Egypt. So he's part of this Muslim Brotherhood thing. He's like an important dude, right, in Islam. But he's crazy, and he's maniacal in his approaches. So what do we want to do with that? We need to have people who can open the eyes of others in a spiritual sense, not a religious sense at this point, because if it's of a certain religion, then it upsets the other people of a certain religion. So you almost can't be of a religion. You need to be non-denominational or something like that if you want to be called anything about religion, but more spiritual. What these people need is what this show is about, but, you know, I don't know if we get heard very much in those Middle Eastern countries. If you are from the Middle East, would you send me an email? Because I'd like to know if anybody's listening over there. I know this is in English, and I don't speak your language, but a lot of folks over there speak English compared to how many people here speak Arabic or some other dialect of the Middle East. So at any rate, this is probably the most important thing right now. I wish our group was in a better position. We aren't at this moment because evil has been attacking us for years. But if we have to deal with it without doing some other things, that's unfortunate. That's why I've asked for as much help as I can get, or we can get, to help us, because the messages I think that I'm talking about would be helpful for others to be able to take up a cause in another country. I'm not going there. So some others have to be doing it. But I'm suggesting that this is a way to start. It's a way to see our way into the future and not have a world that becomes a ticking time bomb and eventually goes off. All right, so what are the other elements then if you're going to try to create a world where people can see God? I mean, yeah, it's pretty hard for them to see God when they've been subjected to such brutality, and et cetera. So obviously you have to end that. Or they're not going to, because the fear of life itself and brutality really disrupts most people, except like spiritually advanced kinds, from being able to see light. And so their reaction will be more along darkness. Then the revolutions can turn very dark, and we may have the worst of all circumstances to deal with. Okay, so what are the other conditions that are necessary after the fear factor is dealt with? That's a big thing, and we'll talk more about different ideas of how we might be able to deal with that, but I'm just bringing it up right now so you can think about it, so we can think about it and think more about it. Okay. The next thing is the people need to have the opportunity to express themselves and be creative, not only without fear, but have opportunity. Now, what is opportunity? Opportunity just means that nobody's going to give anything to them. I'm not talking about social justice. That's the opposite of real opportunity. Social justice is somebody giving something to you to make it a level playing field so you have exactly the same opportunity as everybody else has. That's not an opportunity anymore. That's a structured, controlled society. Some people would call it socialistic at a minimum, maybe communistic. And it no longer has the most important ingredient, which is creativity, the freedom to create. The two go together. You can't have creativity if you don't have freedom. So the society has to be open so that the people can be free. And that's open not just for some people. If women are not as able to be as free as men, the society always goes negative. Period. That's a big change for some of these countries in the Middle East. So part of the spiritual world change needs to be equality for all factions and parts of humanity, but not social justice, where they're equal in what they get. They are equal in the opportunity to create. Opportunity is the key word. How is opportunity supplied then? Well, it is supplied by not making rules, laws, and customs that prevent people from being as equal as the other people in society. And simultaneously, changing any other laws that prevent most or all people from being creative. That's a lesson we might want to learn from the United States. We are overly burdened by rules and laws these days. Our legal system is not based upon justice. It's based upon expediency and, in many circumstances, the ability to pay for and get the law to do what you want it to do. That's not a good thing. So we don't even have equal opportunity in the United States. We have much more because we have general freedom, but there's still a lot of things that could be corrected. When you go to the Middle East or some other countries with revolution in them, those countries have almost none. Now, how can we create opportunity? The first world countries could create opportunity by going and operating banking systems and business systems and educational systems that allow people to learn a profession, learn an occupation, become self-reliant, open businesses, if that's what they choose, learn how to professionally serve others, and also at the same time have some infusion of capital, which I would consider to be microbanking, as has been done in India and some other parts around India. So those are the things that I would suggest to be considered. And it's something that, if we're going to be honest about it, with all the other things that we spend our money on, would probably go a long way towards some future event. We should not just go there and dictate to these folks because it's our money. What we need to do is we need to make rules and then give little bits of money to local people to administrate it and to make sure that it's being used in the way we want, or we cut things off. If we had done the same thing in the old Soviet Union when it broke apart, Russia would not have gone through mafioso heaven and become back to virtually a dictatorship again. We didn't learn our lessons. Maybe we can learn them now. Let's hope we can. I'm hoping we can, because, heck, I don't know what else we might want to think of that we're going to be able to do to make the differences that are so necessary. So I want you to think about that as a possibility. Is it real? Yeah. Could it be helpful? Yeah. Another thing I would suggest is people need to know that they have some level of security. So I would suggest that the United States, in a coalition with other countries, I would say the UN is pretty much been overrun by the dictators and by people who are socialists. So it's going to be very difficult to get them to do this, what I'm going to suggest. But whatever coalition we can get together, we should go in and try to maintain a peaceful presence so people can sense that they have some level of safety. I'm not saying to get involved in civil wars, but I am saying to prevent mad dictators from going off and killing 100,000 people or more in a genocidal, maniacal attack. Okay, so at this point, I wanted to bring these ideas in, because if we're going to have a spiritual world change, I don't think it can happen unless there's some input from countries that aren't going through this kind of disaster. We need to be a stabilizing, we'll call it, say, force, but a non-forceful, as much as possible, stabilizing part of their society. Okay, we'll be back in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds or so to talk more about this issue and others.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And I was just having a little discussion with our engineer, Seth. And I would like to just let you know that, you know, it would be, there's so many groups that I'm familiar with and some that I'm not, that could provide some of the things I'm talking about. I don't think this is good just coming from the government, our government particularly, especially at this time. I think this is something that would be better from, you know, people who are more spiritually minded in the private parts of at least the United States, and then also in other parts of the world as well, to be of the services that I'm going to discuss for the rest of the show. And it would behoove everybody to kind of like say, hey, let's maybe think about doing something instead of just being on the sidelines watching. I know there's some places that are quite dangerous, and I wouldn't suggest anybody probably head off for Libya right now. But there'll be a time when maybe you can. And I'm thinking more of the places where, quote-unquote, the revolution has already begun or happened or whatever way you want to look at it, such as Egypt. And Egypt right now is extremely fragile. And some of the things I'm going to suggest I think would be of great help. So let's go into these ideas of spiritual world change so that we can make some sense out of this thing. The first thing that is important to recognize is if there's been a revolution, you want to immediately stop the revolution. Revolutions have a very short lifespan before they become contaminated by the forces that I told you about in the first part of the show. Those forces become very dark and evil, and they always have a bad outcome. So the first thing you want to do is to stop being revolutionary, which means that the revolution is to create a force against the old stuff. But you won't want to get rid of everything that's old. You just want to get rid of the old stuff that was preventing you from being able to be creative in seeing God and expressing godly creations. If that's where you're at, then great. Your revolution is done. And the next step, then, is to start creating the new structures that will be helpful. They should be open and open-minded. They need to not follow the dictates of a specific religion, especially when those dictates remove freedoms from people in the religion and outside. The society itself needs to be developed in a way that people are as free as possibly can be without infringing the freedoms of others. This is the way you want to try to build a society. And I don't care what name you use when you say you're doing it. That's the premise that you need to uphold. Be aware that society is based upon socialism and especially communism are antithetical to that concept. Socialism is antithetical to that concept in a strictly economic and mostly in a major business or major industrial sense. But communism is completely antithetical to freedom in every sense. So you need to be aware of that, especially if you haven't studied history much. You should study it. And seeing what happens when people have revolutions and use those the context of communism in their idea of restructuring their society. It's almost inevitable. It'll turn evil, genocidal, self-destructive, and other destructive. Really bad thing. I'm not saying that because, like, I'm some anti-pinko guy who just wants to go after anybody who claims to be a communist. I'm talking about it based upon what the premise in communism is. And that is man comes either before God or most of the time in place of God. If you read Karl Marx and Engels, they believe that God was a fantasy and the opiate of the masses. It was the way that, through God, it was the way that the established governments were controlling people. And so their first effort of restructuring society was to eliminate God and most elements of religion. Now, you may not be aware of that. That's true. It's also true of fascism. A lot of people say, well, didn't Hitler create his own church? Well, yeah, but who was the God in his church? It was Hitler. So, I mean, you know, if the God of your church is yourself, that is not a religion based upon some almighty creator. It's based upon some idiot, genocidal, crazy person. Okay. And this is common. This is common in concepts that involve anti-freedom and tyranny. Almost all communist and most socialist societies either start off being tyrannical or soon after they are structured become so. And tyranny is the absence of freedom. And it's caused by a government that has become more powerful than the rights of the people that it governs. So, if we're going to make some changes here, we need to help a country such as Egypt to become an opportunity in freedom, and to show the people that freedom is one of the principles of God. And then other principles such as education and love and inclusiveness, including in religion, with a panoply of all the religions being able to be represented equally. Maybe the thing to do is just build different kinds of synagogues, churches and mosques and you name it, all over the place, and and show people that all religions can be equally respected, and all the rules set forth in religion need to be applied so they in no way infringe on the freedoms of the people in the religion or out. Both. So freedom becomes the most important thing to help people not become dark after a revolution. Freedom has to replace the anger and forces, even if they're nonviolent, of revolution. If freedom does not replace the revolution destroys the society. Now, interestingly, you may think that that was a really brilliant creative thought that I just said, but you can find that thought in the Federalist Papers, written by great men that we find as our founders in the late 18th century. So they were aware of that. They were. And the United States was founded based upon those concepts. They knew that a revolution had great danger. Some of them didn't know until after they full-heartedly supported the French Revolution beyond its, we'll say, life expectancy of what was good, which might have only been the first few days. And they didn't realize that a violent revolution oftentimes remains violent and destructive, whereas a nonviolent or reduced violent revolution does not. And so, you know, like Thomas Jefferson, went over there, brilliant man, but supported the French Revolution for a while, believing that this was a good thing, then understood that the democracy that came out of it was brutal and destructive and eventually led to not only a dictatorship under Napoleon, but it also was genocidal and destructive to many thousands of people. And it became an anti-free, anti-God place to be. So it, and then he realized, oh, well, not all revolutions are the same. And the only reason the American Revolution worked is because it was limited and because freedom replaced revolution. Okay. And remember, freedom has to be economic, it has to be educational, you have to have the freedom to be of religion, you have to have freedom to a personal movement, freedom to be different, freedom to be odd but not destructive to others. These are the things that we need to be focusing on if we're going to be helpful. We could be doing this right now in Egypt and soon in some of the other countries that are having this revolution. We need to do it on a private basis. Our government should not be directly involved. And we need to do it in ways that we're seeing as spiritual rather than political envoys to their system. We have to help others in their system to be the leaders, not us. Why? Because leadership and freedom go together. And the leadership has to come from those who are seeking the freedom and who have to keep the freedom. Leadership among others from the outside, it's just another form of non-freedom. So even though we tried, and we have done this in some countries like Iraq, you have to get out of your own way. And sometimes you have to take chances on the leaders that are present doing the things that you hope to be helpful. Of course, you can support the ones that are seeking freedom, and you can support the ones that are doing some of the other things we're going to be talking about, and that way you're being of support to them, you're saying these are good people. We vote for them, but you may not if you don't want to. And then you end up with something different than just democracy, because the leaders, and I'm not talking about a leader like a dictator, the leaders who may be in the thousands in a country with 88 million people like Egypt, those thousands of people that are leaders in all these different areas and walks of life, some of them should become representatives of the people in terms of governing, rather than just have a pure democracy. A pure democracy would only work with a very high consciousness of all the parts of members of society. It's possible that areas and parts of the United States, and maybe the whole United States, could actually attempt something like this someday in the near future. But not Egypt. Egypt is way far away from that. They need a republic, just like we needed a republic three centuries ago. Oh, well, two plus centuries ago. And when you look at it from that standpoint, it makes sense that you don't want to have a majority vote system where people don't care about the minority being free or the minority being harmed by the majority decisions. That's a dangerous situation. Mob rule, some people call it. But it's a dangerous situation, even though it's democracy. It's what happened in France. And it's what has happened in many democracies before the French Revolution. The answer is that the leaders who are respected and who are helpful then become the people who are also the political leaders who run the government at times. They may go in and out of government. You don't want them to be in too long because that leads to corruption, which is another issue. But it is helpful. It is helpful if you want to have spiritual world change, to have spiritual leaders who help with the creation and freedom system. Now, what about inclusiveness in education, the second part of God's plan? How is that going to interplay? Well, the first thing is to teach teachers and to break out of the mold of there being only Islamic schools that people can go to, where everything is based upon the Quran or some other edict, and is at the whim of religious people. You want to keep religion kind of on its own thing, balanced by different other religions, so that people start having an open mind towards the subject of seeing God. It helps to be able to see God through the non-religious parts of society first, and to try to correct the religious parts in the religions that have a lot of animosity about other religions. So you can't go in and directly tamper with other religions. What you do is you open up the society in many other ways. People start learning freedom and tolerance, and then they start learning inclusiveness after the freedom and tolerance. And then they will change their own religions or leave them, whatever it takes, because they won't put up for an intolerant, unfree religion that tries to infringe and to infiltrate every part of their existence. Instead, they'll look at it and say, hey, I'll go join another mosque, or I'll join a different religion, or I'll maybe won't have a religion for a while, but I'll still can be spiritual and be with God. That's the more likely outcome, provided that the society itself is developed that way. And this is the time to do it. In Egypt, I'm talking about using Egypt as an example, since we're familiar with that. In Egypt, we've got about maybe 4 or 5 months to do all these things in that I'm discussing right now as seed areas. And there'll be many other groups, especially Islamic extremists, we want to go in the exact opposite direction. If we don't do something like this, those groups could, and maybe even likely will, gain power and control over that country. And the people will be no more free. They may be considerably less free than they were under Mubarak. This is crazy. We're leading ourselves down a path of destruction. So it is a severe problem to be concerned with. And we need to be doing what we can right now. What else can we be doing? Well, interestingly, there are revolutions going on in places we don't have much input into, such as Iran. What can we do there? Well, I suggested that, like we did in Japan and Europe, why don't we do flyovers and drop millions of messages since they jam our signals going in and even the internet going in there. Jam our, drop leaflets telling them we support them, giving them some of the ideas that are being represented in this show. Hell, send them a DVD of it for all I care. That'd be fine with me. And just inundate the entire country with ideas and thoughts about, even though they may have to have a violent revolution to get over what they're dealing with, because it doesn't look like nonviolence is going to work too well there, the possibility is there for a free and open society with inclusiveness, and if they still want to have all the other things about their religion, that's their business. But the point is that they don't have to put up with the mullahs and all the crazy other nutcases in their country, and have a kind of, we'll say, awakening, presenting another alternative without it being pro-U.S. or pro-this or that. It just is about God and spirit. Don't talk about it as being about a kind of political move or something. A totally spiritual approach and involves promoting freedom and inclusiveness and love and education and planning. That makes, allows people to have opportunity and creation. And then, after that's developed, that's spirit. And as the people are, if we go back to Egypt now, as the people are starting to move in that direction, if you can get a movement going like that, I'm not talking about tens of thousands, I'm talking about millions of people moving in that direction. And then you go to the third part, which involves the Third Reich, and you start helping people, like I suggested, through banking and bringing in and teaching people businesses and how to be a part of a developing society from a third world country economically, although some people call it second world, but I think it's closer to third, to a first world kind of country where the people have the kinds of opportunities to do virtually anything they want if they're willing to work for it and have the abilities. This is amazing what we could offer. I want you to think about that, and then I want to go over a couple of things. Something that's kind of important, I think you should know this, it's not to give a bad name to any particular internet service, but we have, and still are, with GoDaddy. You may be familiar with that. Well, a number of days ago, apparently they made a terrible mistake, and they lost a bunch of websites, ours included. And they were trying to upgrade some on their computer, the whole their servers, and something crashed. And now they're in a mess. And they didn't tell us about it, which I think was wrong, because lots of people use our website to listen to these shows. And they also didn't tell us about it because I think they're afraid they're going to lose our business, but that's the surest way to lose our business is to not let us know. And we will be down for at least another week, they said. That's how bad it is. They can't even find the files that make up our website. They're like lost and whatever. You know, this is like some kind of nightmare scenario of bad cyberspace or something. And we are going to try to do the best we can, but we have no leverage with GoDaddy at this point. Try to get them to do anything faster, or even to change what they put up. You know, they have this single thing they put up there. Well, they can put anything they want there and let people know what went wrong, but they're deciding not to. So it's a kind of a strange thing. But at any rate, you know, we're just one of the peons among all the zillions of people they have. So if you go to the website of Ageless Wisdom Distributors, which kind of represents the spiritual part of the service that I and many other people are doing. This is that website where these shows are found. For the next week, will probably be unavailable. I'm sorry about that. I know some of you rely upon that. Of course, you still can go to the station's website. I know there's a participation fee. But, you know, the station's been good to us, and if you give them a few dollars to do that, it seems worthwhile. Even if you only want to do it for a month or whatever, because I don't know when we're going to get back up again, it's up to GoDaddy, I guess. I'll tell you this, if we're not up again within the week or so time that they told us, we may be going elsewhere. You know, it's just not a good thing. And we'll start over. It'll put some pressure on us. And right now we have so many things that we're doing, it's not a good time. But at some point we may leave this problem. Now, I'm not saying that things can't happen like this, and we are tolerant of that. We just don't like people being less than forthcoming with us when it does, and then not showing much assistance either on the other end. So I am just saying my honest thoughts here, not to totally annihilate or destroy GoDaddy. I don't think I could anyway. It's a pretty big company. But they certainly could have done better with us in this situation. Okay, so that's I just want to let you know about that, because you may go to the website tonight or tomorrow or whatever and say, oh, I want to hear that show. It's usually, you know, it's several days before we get it up anyway. But unfortunately, you won't be able to get anywhere. You could still get a hold of me at thoughts@whylifeis.com. thoughts@whylifeis.com. That's my email. And there's also one at niles@whylifeis.com. So you can do either one of those, and then you still have an opportunity there for it to communicate with us. And if you're still interested in getting, or if you are interested in getting, Phi Chi Jizik, you can go to www.byjizik, that's BUYGESIC.com. If you would prefer to call, you can call this phone number, 602-431-5762. A lot more interest in Jizik in the last few weeks, and I'll be telling you how that's going in the future. Also, if you want Soul Balance or Ideal Soul Absorption Resveratrol for adults and pets, you can also get all that at the Buy Jizik site. And finally, bringing all that stuff together to one place. So that's going to be of some help, I hope. All right, let's move back to tonight's show, which I got to put it back up here. There we go. And talk about more about how we can really improve the situation. So let's say we've got groups over. I'm just using this as an example again, in Egypt, and they're doing some of the things that I suggest. The spiritual service that each person is doing in terms of Egypt can be of great help. The internet could come into play here, because some of the things you don't have to be physically present for. You could even start a national bank microbanking, over the Internet for Egypt or any of these evolving countries. Of course, it would be great if that were done by our country, but I don't think it would be, and the slant would probably be towards socialism, not a real republic type of freedom. So I'm concerned about that, and for that reason, I would suggest we do this as much as possible on a private basis. But if you happen to have the financial abilities to do this, just think about what it would mean to set people up doing this. The only thing that I am concerned about is to get duped by people who have bad motives and wrong motives over in like Egypt, and who are just saying what they think you want to hear. That's why you do need some people on the ground to give you feedback. But maybe there's some go there and do that, and some stay here and help in other ways over the Internet. And this whole thing could be, you could help restructure their government. And, well, their society first and the government, to become freer and inclusive and helpful. And change them by spirit, some people might even say God's word if you're in Christianity, rather than by attempting to either buy them off, like our government has done on some circumstances with other countries, or make some kind of crazy deals with people of dubious both political and business background that exist in the country at the time. We should be looking for leaders that are spiritual like us, not that just happen to have a factory or two someplace or have power over the military or political endeavors and successes. We need to be looking at now leadership from a totally different angle, from the angle that the spiritual people will be the new leaders in the coming new age. Now, what is that new age that I mean? Well, in the next few years, as we move into the teens and closer to the complete change of the third ray to a fourth ray focus, the society is, in general, are going to need to move more towards a balance between spirit and materials, which there isn't virtually at all. And that will be the preeminent thought after about 2025, because that's when the end of this change takes place. So we should be trying to foster that in the more fragile countries where that may not take place if we aren't trying to help it to take place. It may more naturally take place in places like the United States because we probably aren't going to become an unfree country. We may temporarily have given up some freedoms in the last year or two, but those are things that will change with the wind with politics. And the people who are quote-unquote progressive socialists right now who think that their way is the only way, they're going to go by the wayside. Generally speaking, darkness has its own destructive elements in it, and if you want to force other people to live a life that you think is right for them, even though you say it's good for them, you're on the side of darkness. I don't care what your arguments are. That's the side of darkness. So we're going to try to be the opposite of that. We would try to help people to be vigilant and understand there are elements in their own society which would like to be another dictator, be another tyrant. A religious tyrant is no better, but possibly worse, than a non-religious one. The reason for that is that they are using God's name in the most vain way possible. They're inverting what God is through the access and use of power and the medium of brutality and control and laws and rules that are absurd and inhumane. Especially if they're against like a whole group of people, like women or whatever, that's inhumane. Okay, so we have this window. I would say it's our opportunity to make changes in ourselves so that we can be of help to others. That would be a great thing. Now, I'm suggesting that this could be something that we could be done over the Internet. People might take some of the ideas I present tonight and say, oh, this is kind of interesting, but goofy guy, or whatever you want to call me, on the Internet radio, and he was talking about doing this. Maybe there is some value in it. You know, there might be something that we really can, as a society, do. And it's the giving of that will help us as well to further see God ourselves. Because at a much, much more minor and smaller scale, we're going through some of the same problems right here in the United States that Egypt is. I mean, it's nowhere near the kind of problems they're facing right now. But it is still, we still have some, and we need to deal with it also. So by helping the Egyptians deal with their issues, we could help ourselves. And the same is true of all the other countries that are going through revolution right now. Remember, you want to end the revolution, assuming that you're having one, as soon as possible. And you want to change it to a spiritual, changed society rather than a revolutionary society. Because that almost always goes bad. Okay, so then when we look at the process of this whole thing, and if you want to be involved in the process, how does God fit into that then? You don't want to be of a specific religion because that is going to create, you know, all kinds of alarms are going to go off in people from other religions. Well, I think the way that you approach it is from the standpoint that you're a universalist person. You may have a personal religion, that's fine, but you're not a proponent of or expounder of that religion. This is, you're not expounding necessarily the interests of the United States or any other country for that matter. Rather, what you're trying to do is be of service to people who may have a need for others to help them find opportunity. Remember, opportunity cannot exist if there's no freedom. So the first thing you got to do is get people to want to be free and stay free. Because if they really, in their hearts and minds, want to be free and stay free, no Islamic Brotherhood or radical this or that is going to have any effect on them. They'll say, oh, well, you guys are just like the other turkeys over there. We don't want you to hear either. And you're not going to be ruling nothing. You want to go kill a bunch of Israelites? Go ahead. But you're not getting our help. You're not getting our weapons. You're not getting our money. You're not getting our blood. And you're not getting our people. See how far you get. The thing is to, in an attempt to paralyze possibly and to dismantle the darkness that has grown in a society in which there has been so much lack of freedom. Because even though the Mubarak was so hostile towards extreme Muslim radical people because it threatened his power, the thing that's so terrible about tyranny is that it continues to allow other darkness to grow in a society, but usually below the surface. They just hide out and wait for their opportunity. Whereas in an open and free society, those kinds of organizations are either fringe or they can't exist at all, because people soon realize that they are nonsense. And most people can sense God, and they say, no, this is anti-God. This isn't what God is. This is evil in the name of being a religion and about God. All right, so you have to be careful, because if you're going to present yourself as a server and a helper, you can't be expounding any particular religious viewpoint. Even if you're the world's greatest Christian or the greatest Jew or whatever, that should be something you keep off the table, not part of your service to people like Egyptians at the present time. Again, I'm using them only as an example. You can plug in a bunch of different names these days in the next few weeks, I'm sure, and it'll apply. And you also have to have respect for custom. I want to talk about social issues and social custom. This is different than Sharia law. Sharia law has to do with a certain bent of Islamic religion. But customs and social issues that are non-destructive and do not prevent or obstruct the freedom of others should be promoted, because that's what people want to do. That's their choice to be in that vein. Sometimes the customs seem to outside parties to be either stupid or destructive or harmful, or at least not beneficial to us, but maybe in some ways beneficial to others if we just knew better. This is where you have to have an open mind. If you're a socialist and you believe that you know how to organize society and create business and do all the things that need to be done in a better way than if people were doing it for themselves, you're going to lead those people into hell. Almost certainly into hell. So the solution is to have no preconceived, other than to be godly, isms about what you're supposed to be or what you're supposed to do. And it may even come to pass that some of the people that you help with your microbanking system may say, well, we do like socialism, and so we're going to act in our little village more socialistically. Let them try it. There are some small countries where socialism has had not too bad of an effect. They're not very creative in their approach to developing physical wealth, but they're happy with where they're at. Most of these are in the Scandinavian area of the world. But still, that's the exception rather than the rule. When we look at this whole thing, we need to be open-minded. And open-minded means that if people's social customs are even harmful to them, you just let them know what alternatives there are, so that they at least have the understanding, consciousness, and then they can make any choice they want, and that's their choice. Even if it's harmful, at times, you let them do that. That's where they're coming from. And it may be you think it's harmful, but they don't think so. Or maybe you all agree it's harmful, but they just want to do it. Kind of reminds me of cigarette smokers. They're obviously self-destructive. If you smoke, forgive me for putting you in that self-destructive group, but it's true. Yet, if that's what they want to do, so be it. Of course, it's an extremely good reason not to have universal health care. Extremely good. Anyway, it's an interesting point that people can be free to do as they choose to do, but the consequences of their actions have to be part of their freedom. This is so important, I can't make it more emphasized. If you believe in social justice, you take away the consequences of people's actions to a substantial degree. The result of that is that people become dependent upon, weakened by, and non-changeably by their bad actions. And you turn the society into a dark, lacking consciousness, self-destructive society, because you're not letting people have the consequences of their actions, because you want everybody to have equal opportunity all the time. Well, they don't have equal opportunity all the time if their actions have prevented it from happening. That's called consequences. You give them equal opportunity to start with, but if they take the actions they choose to take and are destructive to themselves, so be it. But then you don't go in and pick up the pieces and say, well, we know that you didn't do the right thing, but we're going to still take care of you. I don't think so. I think that people need to take care of themselves most of the time when they have caused themselves to be destroyed most of the time. Now, there are some exceptions to that. If a person finds God, but has so destroyed themselves that they can't work their way out of it reasonably, some assistance, some charity is needed, even though they created the whole problem for themselves. That's a different thing, because then you're just helping them see God. But if you just want to give them a welfare check and free health care and maybe some kind of union job that makes them a drone out of them, well, that's no good. That's not an answer to the problem. It is the problem. I hope you understand what I'm saying. Socialist societies, for the most part, are self-destructive because of this principle. Now, can you make a socialist society that isn't like that? Yes. Can you make a communist society that isn't like that? No. Because there's a major difference between the two kinds of thoughts. Socialism just deals with major industry and control of the economics of the society. Communism deals with equal or social justice of every part of society. So you take the consequences of everything that people do away from them and make them all the same. That is terrible. Is that in God's plan to do that? How do we know that? Well, evolutionist example. In an odd way, I'm an evolutionist, because what I'm saying is that evolution is part of how God has life develop. But evolution may not see God. Evolutionists may not see God. But evolution is part of God's plan. And evolution is just part of the mechanism. And it works because there are consequences to the actions of each life in the evolutionary cycle. Consequences. Those consequences produce changes. They force in some circumstances. In other circumstances, they lead with human beings to more educated and conscious choices. So, that's a very interesting thing. I always found it rather contradictory that people who are staunchly socialists oftentimes believe strongly in evolution, and they don't realize what they're purporting as a good thing in their socialism is anti-evolutionary. Anti. Okay. So if we're going to be open-minded, we also have to allow people to fail, and to enjoy, kind of an odd word, their failures. Giving them some opportunity to get out of them if they're willing to see a greater portion of God, because when people fail, it's because they weren't open enough to seeing God. Inevitably, that's the truth. So we have to help them in those situations only. If they're not seeing more of God, and they're not trying to, we don't give them handouts, we don't give them this or that, we say, okay, look it. Do you find God? Don't ask me to put you on welfare. That's not going to happen. Okay? It's an interesting point. Human beings, most human beings, have a sense of God, two of them actually, in each of their three bodies that they sense from. It's called the heart chakra and crown chakra. In our etheric or electromagnetic physical body, and also there's the equivalent in our astral, in our mental bodies as well. These chakras don't sense anything other than God. The heart chakra senses God in others and how they are either loving or not loving, and in ourselves, whereas the crown chakra, the head chakra, senses how much we are co-creating and being creative of God, and how much others are. In order to stop a revolution and to move it into a spiritual change, we need to be using the first sense the most in the beginning. It takes that first ray to destroy the revolutionary element and create the spiritual. That's what you're really doing. The first ray does that. It first destroys something, in this case it would be the revolution itself, making it into a completely nonviolent, but also more than nonviolent, a conscious spiritual change. And then the second part, the second chakra comes in, as we bring in inclusiveness and love and education and planning, and helping those folks to be open-minded and work together, even among people that they in the past thought were too different from them and wrong in their minds, even if their minds might have been pretty screwed up. So this is our means. This is the way that we can get there. Now you could say, well, oh, that's just capitalism, isn't it? No, not exactly. Yeah, I'm saying to people, if they want to be capitalists, and they want to start businesses, and they want to have free enterprise, the ability to create various products and services. That's great. They have that opportunity. But let's say they don't want to do that. Let's say they just want to work for someone else. Still being involved in the capitalist society, but they don't want to be the capitalists in the exterior sense. Then what? Well, that's fine. That's okay. Again, they may still even think that socialism is a good idea or whatever. But the point is that this allows them to have the freedom. And it allows others who want to be capitalists or create businesses or do whatever they want to do, they have theirs as well. In the U.S. right now, it's hard to be a capitalist because the rules and regulations are reaching a point where it's almost impossible to start a business and maintain it. It's just becoming very hard to do. And there's reasons for that. Now, I want to bring this into closer to home, so to speak. Some people are claiming we're having a revolution right now in Wisconsin and Indiana and whatever else about people who are protesting about unions being disenfranchised from their members by losing the ability to collectively bargain. And is that a revolution? Actually, what they're doing is not revolutionary, but it is a means of protesting to get people to recognize or be aware that they don't think they're being treated fairly, and they're not being given the opportunities that they thought they deserved to have. So you could say, well, isn't that similar to what's going on in Egypt? And I would say, absolutely not. Nor is it even close to what's going on in Libya. They're like, there's no, really no comparison. So if you think that that is the truth of what's going on, then I would suggest that you think some more. It's not happening. Now, what about this guy Van Jones is going around and having himself a big protest? Well, he's a communist. And he's going to do that tomorrow, I guess, a whole bunch of cities. He's a communist, and most of the large unions, like SEIU, etc., are dominated by communist and especially socialist-thinking people. They're strongly progressive Democrats. And what they believe is that there should be equal opportunity for people with buffered and sometimes no consequences for their actions. And the buffering is done by a thing called their union. What the union says is, no matter how much our people screw up, you can't fire them. No matter how much our people screw up, you have to pay them more each year. No matter how much our people screw up or are not productive enough for you, you have to pay them a large retirement with medical coverage and all kinds of other things. And so that's really what the union is trying to do. And the rest of the country is starting to rebel against that. I say rest, I don't mean necessarily all people. I'm saying maybe as much as a majority of the people in some states and places are saying, you know, this social justice thing is nonsense. If your people aren't able to produce things at a reasonable cost, and if you're driving state governments into oblivion, and if you're destroying businesses helter-skelter, then that's not a good thing, and we're not going to support your ability to do that. So how do we change this problem of consequences as far as it affects unions? Well, it's not too different than Egypt in this sense. What's wrong with this union thing is there is a lack of spiritual agreement between states and state legislatures and the unions. The unions have become greedy, and their greed has caused them to lose sight of God. The reason they got greedy is because they found a method to make more money for their leaders by taking the dues that are forced to be paid by the governments of the states. They force the people who are in the unions to pay the dues. And then they keep those dues to re-elect more people who will do the same. That is a kind of pyramid scheme of leadership that is very dangerous and dark. And it has led to greed and corruption. So how do you change that? Well, if you bring God into the picture, which I would suggest, you let people know that this is greedy and that the way to stop it is to change the collective bargaining system so that none of the dues can be used, even voluntarily used, for this purpose. Now, that's going to be hard, because you get into some ideas of freedom that the Supreme Court has codified, the U.S. Supreme Court, that makes it difficult in terms of the question of expression of freedom of speech, etc. But my thought is this. You can make a deal. You bring the union in. Let's say if I'm Governor Walker in Wisconsin. You bring all the folks in and you say, look, here's the deal. We know what you want. We understand why you want it. And you're not going to be able to have that anymore. But we will continue to allow for you to collectively bargain. The only problem is that that you're not going to be able to use the power of your union to force people to pay dues to you guys. That's it. You're not going to get the dues that they can keep their money or they can give it to you if they choose. And then if you do get the money, no matter whether they give it to you or not, you can't use it for political purposes. And that's the part that's going to be difficult to do because of the Supreme Court's concepts of freedom. And maybe we have to find some very creative way around that problem. Because if it's encouraging corruption and greed, we're going to need to solve that. Now, maybe you solve it on the politician side. I'm not sure. You know, that's why maybe you have elections where people don't get donations and all that stuff. You know, first it's been shot down. So it's a difficult subject, very difficult subject. But at the present time, this is a cancer that is growing, and it could destroy our country. So we have to be responsible to stop it, even though I wouldn't call it revolutionary. I would call it awakening of the general population to something that mostly the union bosses have only known about and been trying to keep it secret. But we have to stop it because it's corrupt and it's greed. And it's ungodly. Now, maybe if we can get the union members to understand that concept, that even though they seem to benefit by buying politicians through their dues and paying for their election, it doesn't serve them in the long run because they're going to become victims to their own darkness. Oddly, it's not too different from socialism or communism. It is always self-destructive. These contracts that they have, some of them have contracts that get 80-85% of their income in retirement. And then they get complete health care at 100% in the same circumstances. Well, that's a free ride, right? Sure, they had to work 20 years for somebody. But at a rate that's usually a third to a half more, again, than what people who aren't in the union make. So the union has higher wages right from the get-go. It's not like they're giving up something. They're making more money, usually. Not always. And especially true these days of government workers who, unfortunately, started making more money in the recent decade or two, because before that they were giving up at least a significant portion of their income to work for the government, so there was some reason to say, well, we'll give you a little better retirement. Not anymore. This makes absolutely no sense today. So maybe the people from 20 years ago, obviously, they should get maybe what they bargained for because they do give up some of their income. That's not true today. These people are making more than anybody in the private sector or than the averages. It doesn't make sense. Again, consequences are very important because it helps people to make change, but also being more spiritual. If people think and understand that what they're doing is greedy and possibly corrupt and they're supporting corruption, they may on their own choose to change it. So maybe we should all be talking about this and letting them know what we think. If you're in a union, you could do something even more. You could talk to your fellow union people and say, you know, we got to look at the other side of this thing. We're harboring a corrupt system that needs to be helped. Now, maybe we can't change it all alone, but we could certainly make a big dent on the changing. And then everybody will be treated more fairly and better in that kind of system. Now, do we want to destroy unions? No. Unions have some benefits for society. They balance out people who have monopolies or tend towards monopolies in business. And they also help to prevent, we'll say, abuses of power by people who own businesses and are not conscientious and godly people. They give some ability for people to have a voice and to fight back against wrongful business practices against their employees. So unions have a benefit. There's no reason that we should want to get rid of them. It's just how they've become structured in the politics that's so serious. Most of this took place after World War II, and it's become really a problem in the last few decades. We can make a better system, one that is helpful for everybody. So I'm kind of jumping around here, but I thought I wanted to cover that because that's also, a lot of people are thinking that's a revolution. It's not a revolution. It's protesting to keep the status quo. It's not. They're not trying to change the system. Actually, the revolution is the Governor Walkers, et cetera. They are the more revolutionary people. Believe me, those union people are not trying to revolve around anything. They're not trying to change anything. They just want things to be the way they've been. Now, they might be willing to give up some of that, but reluctantly, because they see that they're maybe on the losing side this time. But it's not a revolution. Even though it may resemble, because you see a lot of people walking around with signs and yelling. But that's, don't use that as an example or as your yardstick. It's much more succinct and involved than that kind of idea. Okay, so let's get back to the general idea of the world that is in revolution. Where is all this revolution likely to lead, and how can we stop the worst from happening? Well, we're making huge mistakes in terms of the way we've been dealing with revolution. We tend to support, the present administration tends to support those revolutions that in some way benefit the United States, but not the people in the revolution of the world, which is a bad mistake. I'll give you a direct example. We did not support the Iranian people. We almost were anti-Iranian people and pro-Iranian government a year ago. When they tried, it's been almost 2 years now, a year and a half ago, when they tried to free themselves from the grip of these extreme radical Islamists running their government, we could have done exactly what we did do in Egypt, broken through the internet that they had, like I said, put pamphlets in the air, and many other covert operations, which we didn't use, to help these people out. Yeah, I would even give them weapons. I'd do whatever I could to allow them to protect themselves rather than to get shot and destroyed in the streets. You see, we could have done something. Now, I do believe, by the way, in peaceful revolutions, if it's possible. But when you've got people with machine guns just shooting you down, you can be peaceful as you want, and it's not going to change the outcome. You're going to be dead. And dead revolutionaries, dead protesters, don't do much of anything once they're dead. Not in this world. Sure, they could become martyrs, but that's about it. And you don't need more than a few of them to be martyrs for encouragement. The rest are just dead bodies. So if we're going to be doing this sort of thing, we need to be wise and not, unfortunately, influenced by politics that are very wrong and goofy. Talking about the politics of the present administration. I'm not saying the one before that had the right politics either, by the way. But it's important to recognize that we can make some changes here in terms of the political environment we're dealing with. Now, this is different than what I was talking about before. I was talking about us doing this as private. But on a public side and the governmental side, we're just doing the worst stuff we possibly can. We're not functioning correctly. If you're going to call a dictator out and say, you got to get out, you can't go next door to him and not even mention the guy next door's name for 2 weeks while there's protests in his country. because maybe your religious leader and a friend of his went over there and spent several weeks having a great party with them, talking about you-know-who. So just because you have that background, you have to be bigger than that, because that's so incredibly dark and selfish and self-focused. You know, Gaddafi has always been a tyrannical jerk. So if you, just because your best friend and his friend think that Gaddafi is a wonderful person, and maybe you do too on some personal level, he's still destroying and killing thousands and thousands of people. And to not even bring up his name is the worst hypocrisy and a very dark thing. So we can't do things like that. If we're going to be a country of light, the light has to start with us. We can't go out and say, well, we want all you folks to be enlightened, but we're really these dark jerks who are not even saying a bad word about the guy who's trying to kill you. Yeah, that'll go over good. That's going to work. Yeah. There's a lot of issues here, a lot of problems. And we need to be addressing those problems at the voting booth with our representatives and senators, especially if you're a Democrat. Democrats have more power and change than Republicans do at this point, because the Democrats that are in office right now have been doing a lot of negative things. Some things they say are quite positive. If you're a Democrat, be able to see the differences between what they're doing, good and bad. Call them on the bad things and encourage them to do the good things. And try to get them to be more open-minded. That would be a very helpful thing. And if you're either Republican or independent or whatever, try to get all the people to do more responsive things that show that they are looking out for God and light in the world, rather than some self-interest in some quote-unquote false national interest. How can there be a national interest that isn't God, an interest of God? What does it say? Every place you look in our coins and money, etc., in God we trust. I know some people don't believe in God, but as a nation, we still, that's our way of saying who we are, in God we trust, right? So I want you to consider that maybe we need to make some adjustments in our government, to say the least. And we need to have a consistent, honest, non-lying, non-hidden, unhidden president and staff. And we need to have a country that backs up and stands for freedom and helps revolutions become new societies with freedom and love and justice. And a society as good or better than we have for ourselves. This should be our real goal. And forget about oil. We have more than enough oil if we decided to ever go get it right here in and around the United States. And gas and other means. We just decided not to do that, and the present administration is making a big deal out of that. So that's what's going on. Okay, we're out of time for right now. So I want you to think about everything I said. I said a lot of things tonight. There are a few things I didn't get to, but that's okay. I think we covered the subject fairly well. And I hopefully you understand what I mean when I say revolution and spiritual world change, because now you'll say, wait, we can be doing things way differently. Well, hopefully you will be saying that and thinking that. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.